big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, thank you for being the best looking podcast listeners in the world. Okay, today we are doing episode 137, and we are talking about single versus double deep brood chambers. Now, as we've talked about several times, you know, a lot of the podcast really does better probably when you listen to the beginning, because if you're brand new and someone just says, single versus double deep brood chambers, and you're like, I have no idea what that means. But we're going to go through a couple of introductory concepts to make sure you at least have some of those basic foundational things, so we can kind of mix it up a little bit to make sure that this is appealing for both brand new beekeepers and people who are a little bit more experienced. So we'll talk about things from the physical perspective, like what the boxes look like. We'll go into some pros and cons, some setup, the overall hive configuration, how it affects management, all that kind of stuff. As you might recall, we've been running through what I called kind of like the new beekeeper series, you know, some concepts and ideas, everything from the legal aspects of beekeeping to selecting a space, packages versus nukes. I listed all of those out by episode in the previous episode. This one I'm not really going to kind of include with that, because I feel like it's not that this is like a really advanced concept. It's actually very simple. But it's one of those things where if you don't exactly know what you're doing, there's a couple small things that you could do that could kind of make things a little more challenging for yourself. I think that as a brand new beekeeper, when you're trying to get all of your comb drawn up and you don't have drawn comb yet, that is another challenge. And again, we'll talk about that as we, you know, work into the episode. But I feel like there's just a few things going on in year one that trying to go with the single deep approach or the single brood box approach can kind of make things a bit challenging for you. So I'm going to recommend you hold off on that for maybe years two or three, you know, down the road a little bit. But that being said, if you listen to the episode and you're like, no way, man, I'm doing this in year one, I don't care. Tell me what you want to tell me. I'm doing it. That's cool too. But if you decide that's the approach you want to take, there's nothing wrong with that. Give it a shot. Jump into the Discord room. Ask us questions. Hit me up directly. Whatever you got to do, we'll try to talk you through it and help you succeed. Okay, so talking about hive configurations, because that's really what we're talking about today, there are a lot of options out there. I've seen so many things. I've done a lot of different things. And this particular approach is just one of many options. And I like to, you know, break out the old Outback Steakhouse thing, right? No rules, just right. You can kind of do just about anything. Like, bees are pretty simple animals, simple insects, right? They just give them a cavity that's dry, that's of a certain space, and they're very adaptable. They can make things work and they can make things happen. But I think it gets really, really neat as a beekeeper when you're able to experiment and try different things and just see how wild or crazy. Like, I remember I was using some two-frame nukes a few years ago, and I stacked them like four high, like just for the fun of it. And I had a bunch of stabilizing things on the sides of them to make sure they didn't blow over, because they would absolutely blow over if you left them alone like that. But again, you can play with things and do all kinds of fun stuff as you get further into your bee journey. But when it comes to this particular approach here, talking about, you know, single brood chamber versus two, let's go ahead and just talk about what is a brood box, just to kind of level set things and get a kind of a baseline definition. So, of course, brood is new, you know, new eggs, larvae, pupating larvae that are becoming, you know, honeybee workers, drones, depending on, you know, what the eggs are, whether it's drone brood, a queen, you know, in a queen cell or a worker. Those would all be in a pupal state at some point. So you'll have all phases of the life cycle development of the honeybee taking place in the brood chamber. So it can start out on a brand new hive as a single frame. When the bees are just establishing everything and they're drawing out comb, everything has to go in one frame. You're going to have eggs being laid and nectar being stored, And then as they draw more and more comb and create more and more space, they can actually start putting things where they need to be. But any space that the bees are using to raise brood could essentially be referred to as the brood box, the brood chamber. It will generally start in the middle of a space. So if you look at a traditional old school way that bees used to do things in the wild, you have your cavity in the tree, and they're going to start at the top and they're going to draw the comb down. And as they start getting enough space to do some work in that one area, they'll go ahead and go to the left and the right of that. And they, like I said, they're going to start in the middle, kind of work their way out, start pushing down. And then once they have everything established and drawn out, they can move up and down as needed. Well, in your hive, if you're using a traditional Langstroth hive, they're going to pretty much start in the middle. That you can dump the bees in and they will just kind of figure out where the middle is. And they're going to start around frames 5 or 6. And they're going to start drawing the comb up and going through that whole process that I just described. So whether you end up using a single brood chamber or a double, that is completely not even in play at this point in time, because every new beekeeper, whether you have a nuke or a package of bees or you catch a swarm or whatever it is, everybody should be starting with the single something, whether you're using all mediums, you know, all deeps, deeps for the brood chamber and mediums for your honey supers, whatever it might be, you're pretty much going to start with a single something. So again, for the newer folks here, when we talk about deeps, that's your the tallest, largest, deepest hive bodies and the frames that go with them. The mediums are kind of the middle-sized, typically used for honeys. When we say the word honey super, we just mean honey box. A super and a box are pretty much synonymous, but people don't talk about a brood super. Supers are generally associated with honey, so you would add a honey super, or someone might say, yeah, I think it's time to super those hives. But everybody's starting out with one. So if you're using mediums and you're using all mediums, great, have at it. Now, I don't necessarily recommend this single box approach with mediums. And we'll talk about that as we get into some of the numbers here in the next section. But if you're starting with a single deep and you put a nuke in, let's say, for example, I would say roughly within like 2 to 3 weeks max, you're adding your second deep on top of that. You may even go ahead and just do it right away. If you're adding them, you know, in the spring, typically probably on a flow already anyway, you can just throw the second deep on top. But if you went with this single, you know, brood box approach, you would be looking to go ahead and get that queen excluder on next and whatever your solution is on top of that. And again, we'll talk about it as we go through here a little bit more. We'll start here on the single brood box. And one thing that people will say a lot is, well, there's just not enough space, or they don't know. They think, geez, that's an awful lot. I mean, I've been told we need two brood boxes. I'm not sure I can just do this on one. You know, what does that really look like? I mean, is that even possible? So as we know, each frame has two sides. There's roughly about 3,500 to 4,000 cells per side. And that's going to depend on the type of, you know, the type. Are you using wax foundation that they drew into cells? Are you using a pre-drawn comb? Are you using plastic foundation? All of these things can have a little bit of a different contributing factor as to what the actual numbers of cells are that are available. You also have what I call wonky comb. There's things where they just draw the comb a little bit funny. There are, you know, queen cups. You may have some areas on the corners and things with some drone brood in them. So there's a lot of different things that can impact that. But you're looking at that 35 to 4,000 per side of a frame. So about 7 to 8,000 cells per frame. So in a standard 10-frame, you know, Langstroth deep box, you're looking at 70 to 80,000 total cells available. Now, for the math that we're going to do here today, we're going to assume the low end of that because we really want to make sure we're not missing anything. We've accounted for everything and we have a little bit of a buffer just to make sure we're not going to be wrong on the math when it gets to the end. Now, if we allocate about 20% of that space to say that this is not going to be used for brood, so you're going to have, because if you look at, think about a brood frame, if you've ever seen one, or if you can go and do a search for one and find one, or can't find one, go to the Discord room, message me, whatever, we'll help you track down a picture of a brood frame. But if you envision the rectangular frame, a large kind of horizontal oval in the middle, that is like where the brood would be. The lower left and right quite often can be drone brood, or it can just be all worker brood. Upper left, upper right tends to be, you'll see a little bit of honey or some nectar up in there. But there's a ring that usually goes around that brood that's kind of nothing. It's like a ring of nothing that's a space available for them to continue, or for the queen to continue laying eggs. But then you have some pollen on the edge of that. So there's a lot of different things that are there between the pollen and then the nectar and the worker brood themselves. So we're going to say that 20% of that space is not being used for worker brood. It's something else. So that's going to leave you with 56,000 total cells available for worker brood. Now, I don't have a way to effectively do the math. I've had some very prolific queens in the past. I've had some queens that lay eggs like crazy. But I would say if I had to do the math on what I've seen in my queens, I think I would say roughly the 1,200 to 1,500 eggs per day is probably about the max that I've seen. Very non-scientific, right? I'm not out there with a camera on 24 hours a day watching how many eggs that she lays. But that's just kind of what I've seen with rough math. A queen can lay up to 2,000 eggs a day. I think that's a bit more on the rare side. But again, you know, you may have people in a lab setting in an area where they have much better visibility that say, no, 2,000 eggs a day is very common for what we see. So we're going to assume that that higher number is what every queen everywhere is going to lay. So that puts us on a 21-day brood cycle for worker brood. That's 42,000 eggs are going to get laid. Now, let's do a pause for just a second here. A good, large, strong colony, to me, is anything over like about 30,000 bees. You get to that 28, 30, 32,000 range, that's a strong colony. You get to like 40, 50,000 bees. I mean, that is a big, big colony. That is a lot of production. I'm going to reread what I just said to you a second ago. Over a full 21-day brood cycle, that's 42,000 eggs laid. So in less than a month, the queen has basically created, well, I mean, obviously she's laying over the course of that 21-day period. But I mean, through that 21-day period, she has laid enough eggs to make an entire colony. Now, when you hear that number and you think, oh my gosh, that's insane. That's crazy. We're going to have 100,000 bee colonies in no time. But what we don't take into consideration is the regular daily attrition on bees is probably somewhere like in the 250 to 300 range. But it also, you need to keep in mind that the more bees you have, the more you're going to lose. So while 250 might be a good daily average, you know, year round or whatever during the season from, let's just say from March through October, 250 a day might be a good average, but in the bigger flow time of year where you have those foragers out there really gathering all that nectar, you might be closer to 650 or 700 a day. You may be losing literally 700. So in that scenario, those 2,000 are keeping up with your losses and doubling what you had before. But it's not like, oh, cool, look, we have 42,000, you know, new honeybees here. It's 42,000 minus the 600 or 700 or whatever, you know, whatever it was leading up to that. So there are significant losses taking place through the aging and just natural attrition of the bees. So I don't want you to think that, you know, you're going to have these 100,000, you know, worker hives going on. That's probably not going to happen. But still, that is a lot of eggs. And so you can kind of get an idea now of just how rapidly that they can grow and expand. I mean, think about what's going on right now. We were just talking about it, I think, this morning in the Discord room about how, you know, like swarm season is getting ready to really kick in here because we had like some of those nice days in February and a couple weeks ago. I think even last week, there were some nice days. And a lot of the country is seeing the exact same thing. They had these really warm days come in. So the bees, man, they're ramping up. They're going nuts. That queen's laying eggs like crazy. And then now, you know, they probably, a lot of places have probably already seen some swarms. But I think that starting like next week, whenever, wherever you are, like right now, I think I was like almost 80 degrees yesterday and it's 45 this morning. As soon as you break into, in my opinion, like that next round of like 70s and 80s or whatever it is, I think it's going to start getting a little crazy. So I think that starting probably within the next 5 to 7 days, swarm season is going to be really ramping up for a lot of people. But that's what happens when you're able to lay that many eggs in that short of a period of time. Now, going back to our math, 42,000 eggs laid over that 21-day cycle, we still have 14,000 available cells. So that's a full week's worth of extra space. Now, just because this is the area where I say that this is probably not the best thing for a year one beekeeper. And the reason I say this, because again, hey, it's a full week, right? We got 14,000 extra cells. I mean, and if she's a little bit less productive, might even be more like 20,000. She might have, you know, 3 weeks worth of space, or I'm sorry, two, like a week and a half or 2 weeks worth of space. But one, the drawn comb is a big factor. Yes, she might be able to lay 2,000 eggs a day, but they can't necessarily draw 2,000 cells a day. I mean, they definitely can. They're very capable of doing it. But is that happening in conjunction with all the other activity that's taking place? Like, if you have all the comb being drawn by all the workers doing that work, that's a lot of worker bees that are not out foraging, that are not bringing in more resources. So you're going to have a lower production, you know, kind of capacity in those early, you know, few weeks for that first season. It's just a little bit tougher. But if you're operating on an existing colony, you already have drawn comb, then you really are going to need to be paying attention. Because like I was starting to say, you know, even though mathematically they may not swarm, you do have to be mindful of the whole bee space versus people space thing. And there's a few other factors I want to discuss too. But for those of you who are new to like the bee space versus people space discussion, I think it's worth talking about again. People will very regularly will tell you like, okay, if you have a 10 frame Langstroth deep when they are at about 70% capacity, so 7 out of 10 frames are being used, you should go ahead and add more space, whether it's a honey super or another deep, whatever it might be. A lot of people, I feel like I was several years in before anybody really started helping me to understand the difference between bee space and people space. So let's say we have 2 frames on the left, 1 frame on the right. Everything else is being used, and those are just wax foundation. To me, I'm like, okay, cool. I probably need to go ahead and throw another deep on here. You know, throw a bunch of wax foundation, whatever you want to use, whatever your foundation of choice is, I want to get that in. So I'll drop another deep on top, walk away. They've got plenty of room. I can go on vacation for 2 weeks, no problem. Now, in theory, you kind of should be able to, right? If you just drop an entire deep, you've more than doubled their capacity. They're not going to draw all of that up, fill it all up with, you know, new brood and pollen and nectar and all the other resources they need. They're not going to do that during your 2 week vacation. But this is exactly what we're talking about. That's people space. When people look at that, they go, oh, cool, plenty of space. Bees don't see it the same way. So getting bees to move up and down and left to right can be really challenging sometimes. So this is where we would talk about a situation of, yes, you can add that deep on top if you want with all those, you know, frames of new foundation. But what I would probably do at the same time is go ahead and take, you know, 1 frame out of the middle that has brood, move it up into the top deep, put it right smack in the middle, and then put, you know, undrawn comb, you know, wax foundation. That's probably the more technical term for undrawn comb, wax foundation. But put that right in the middle of the lower deep that they've just got done drawing out. And now they're like, whoa, wait, what's going on here? And they'll draw that up pretty quickly. But now they've got brood up top as well. And those nurse bees are going to follow that brood up and they're going to start working up above. So that's just one little tactic and trick. And we've talked about it before and we'll talk about it some more as we dive into some of the more details of management and everything. But it's really important to recognize that bee space versus people space thing, because they can have space left, right, and above and not even touch it. And next thing you know, you're seeing swarm cells and they will swarm. And it is so just demoralizing when that happens, because you feel like you're doing everything right. And another challenge I've seen too is where people will say, particularly like on this single deep approach or the single brood box approach, is they'll say, okay, I got my deep in place and I'm seeing them drawn out. I've got, let's say you're using all nothing but drawn comb in your brood chamber, and then you throw a honey super on top of that. So you have a queen excluder on top. This is an important component, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more here. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this right now. So when you're using the single brood box approach, what you're doing is you're putting the box down first on top of a bottom board, and then a queen excluder is going on top of that, and then you're putting all your honey on top of that. So whether it's another deep or mediums or whatever you want, all of those things are going to go above the queen excluder, and you're going to isolate the queen down into that single box. So if you have completely drawn comb everywhere down there at the bottom, and then you throw the queen excluder on, but you have wax foundation on top or just plastic foundation as your honey super, you're thinking, okay, their space is in place. They've got everything they need. Now it's time for them to start putting honey in, and again, going on vacation for 2 weeks. We'll come back and check them when I get back. They're probably going to swarm. They still don't see that new, you know, honey super that you dropped on top. They don't see it as space, and they may very well go ahead and swarm. Now, again, having drawn comb in there is a different story. If you dropped a medium box on top, let's say, on top of that queen excluder, and it's completely drawn, comb, and ready to go, highly likely that they will go up and start using that space. But let me go into a couple more things that can cause issues with that single deep kind of approach. We talked about the math being there and there being an extra week of laying time, you know, available. So there should be plenty of cells, but there's another challenge that can happen. There's a couple of challenges that I want to make sure we talk about. One of them is it is possible in the example like we just gave where we added the queen excluder, we put the honey super on top of that to give them, let's say that your plan is to have the deep for their brood chamber and you're going to do maybe one honey super above that for them. And then everything above that is for you, as an example. Well, you've given them all this extra space now. What should happen is they now come back and put all that honey above in the honey super, and all of the brood continues to get raised down below, and everybody's happy. What can happen is they can completely ignore that space, and now every empty emerging worker cell, instead of being cleaned up and used for a new honeybee, and allowed, you know, allowing the queen to come through and lay new worker brood and new eggs, they're backfilling that with nectar. So this is what is one of the things that drives swarming behavior. There is a pheromone that the brood will emit. And when that brood pheromone goes away, that signals to the colony like, oh crap, we're running out of space. There's no more place to put new young brood. We better go ahead and make some queen cells. So this kind of mismanagement of space basically is very possibly going to cause them to want to swarm. So again, backfilling the nectar into a place where it shouldn't be. There are some genetic components to it as well. You know, there is a strong propensity to swarm in the spring already. And a lot of this is driven by genetics. So you can have, for example, I know like Africanized bees will swarm it with very small groups. Russians are the same way. They'll swarm pretty easily. And this goes into those characteristics I talk about in selecting the types of bees that you want to use or that you'd like to raise and understanding their tendency to swarm, because some of them will swarm with a very small cluster or a very small group, whereas others will barely swarm at all, or they have to be really large for that to take place. Another component to this is how old your queen is, how strong her queen pheromone is, because as the population and the growth starts to expand, you know, rapidly in this space, you could end up with an issue of queen pheromone not propagating effectively. Again, it's less of a problem with a newer, younger queen, you know, who's maybe into her second year, because as we've discussed, you know, if a queen is born or emerges this year in 2025, 2026 should theoretically be her most productive year. So anyway, there's a few reasons and things that can take place that can cause you to not exactly have as much space available as you had hoped to have. So don't just rely on the math of the cells themselves. So let's talk about the pros and cons kind of highlighted here within this single brood box approach. I really like the ease of inspection. So let's just say that you've been doing this for a little while and you're very comfortable in your setup and you've got your bottom board and you have a deep on top of that. You've got all your frames are drawn, everything's going great. You have a queen excluder, and maybe you have three or four honey supers on top of that. The cool thing with that is all of that honey is going to be essentially just all honey. There's not a lot of differences between it. I mean, it's possible that you may have, well, it's very likely you're going to have some capped, some uncapped, but it's all very interchangeable. So if you had, let's say, the deep at the bottom and the queen excluder and four honey supers on top of that, you could decide I'm taking one, I'm taking two, you know, depending on the conditions of your area and what they need to overwinter. It kind of doesn't really matter which one you take. You just want to take, you know, capped honey. So if you want to take the one on the top for you, just take it off and you're done. If it's inspection time, you know that the only thing that's going to be in the top three is just honey or nectar, or, you know, open nectar. That's it. So you go down to the bottom. Now remember, your brood chamber is at the bottom, so you don't even have to lift up the box. You move the honey off to the side, pull up your queen excluder, and you're inspecting 10 frames. So there, you know that there is a queen on one of those 10 frames. So every frame you pull out, you got a 10% chance. I generally probably start somewhere near the middle to increase my odds. But in the single, you know, layout like that, she will move a little bit better kind of left and right. I've seen when you do the double configuration, you know, and again, we'll talk about it in a second here, but you do tend to have a bit more of a division of that. It might be a lot more in the middle of both of them, of both boxes, but definitely makes it easier to inspect when you have her isolated to a single box. Another thing that I like too is in the spring, you know, we get these weather fluctuations like we've seen. And I think having that brood kind of all in one space in a single box makes it a little bit better. Now, again, as you're adding in a honey super, you're still having space that is a bit void because there's not as many bees, but you're not adding as big of a space or as big of a cavity that's kind of unregulated. But I do like having that overall just smaller footprint, smaller profile. And I tell you, a lot of people and places will overwinter with a single deep. Now, this gets really weird. This is kind of a very counterintuitive type of thing. But there's a lot of variables involved and variables at play with it. So when you look at, for example, like Eddie and Tardif up there in the Yukon, he has these like really heavily insulated boxes. And he's done all the math. He knows the R values of everything. And he has the sensors in place. And he knows exactly what it takes to overwinter, you know, his boxes in a single deep. This is not the same single deep that you're going to use down in Alabama or Georgia, Mississippi. You know, like, that's completely different because you don't need the same insulating factors generally to be in play as you would up in the Yukon. But he still does it in a single box. So I think that there's this, the mindset, and especially if you try to do like I say a lot, when you try to say, okay, what does the tree have, right? Well, the tree is just a cavity and this is what it is and it's vertical. So I'm just going to try to do my best to make that same thing. The one thing that we kind of omit with that a little bit is the fact that, you know, the sides of the beehive on a standard Langstroth hive, the R value is somewhere between like 0 and 1. It's like, you know, 0.2 or whatever it is. But let's say it's half of an R. Well, the sides of what, you know, people are using in northern climates when they put very large, you know, layers of insulation around them or thicker styrofoam boxes or other types of things, they're making them R4, R5, R6. So they're making it easier for the bees to stay warmer, generating less heat, less energy being used, and therefore needing less honey to overwinter. We kind of got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but I just wanted to talk about that kind of briefly. So one of the cons on this single brood box approach is you do need to pay attention a bit more on the swarm side of things. Like I said, there's just with all the variables that we just discussed, especially for a newer colony and getting drawn comb, getting everything where it needs to be, you just really want to pay attention on that. And, you know, as another option, what you could do too is you could start with the traditional deep setup, double deep setup, and then once everything is established, migrate down to the single brood chamber, right? And that's certainly one way to go. But I think probably the most important thing, it's not necessarily a con, it's just something you need to be cognizant of and paying attention to with the single box approach or the single brood chamber approach, is making sure you have sufficient resources for them. Because if that whole entire bottom deep is allocated for brood, that means you've got to find a way to make sure that they're getting whatever goes on top of that. So in your area, you may need to have, you know, you may go ahead and put another deep on to make sure they have a ton of honey. So you would still overwinter, you know, like a, you would pull the queen excluder for the winter, obviously, but you would be overwintering two deeps. Or you can go ahead and just leave, you know, mediums on top of that. Take the top deep and just do all mediums for honey and leave it at that. Now, if you're pulling the queen excluder off and allowing full motion up and down in the off season, you do run into the possibility that in the spring she's going to start laying wherever she happens to be. And now your medium frames in the top and the middle may end up having some brood in them. So that's kind of one disadvantage there. If you were overwintering with a set of double deeps, you could just, you know, isolate them to that, maybe reverse them in the spring or whatever. But there's a bit more, like, as you can see, there's a bit more detail and a bit more management involved because you kind of have to be paying attention to, I've got my brood is here and my honey is here, and then there's their honey is here, but I have to make sure they can access their honey in the winter. So I pull the queen excluder here. A few more moving parts, but nothing that isn't manageable. Okay, so let's talk about that double deep approach. It's the exact same thing, but you have two of them. So that summarizes that one pretty quickly. What I like about it is it allows the bees to move very much in the way that they want to move. They have a lot of freedom to put, you know, honey to the sides, a lot of the brood in the middle. You definitely have less. Once everything is drawn and established, there's definitely a low propensity for the swarming, or a lower propensity, I should say, for swarming, because they do have plenty of space, but they are going to fill it out incredibly quickly. I mean, you take two deeps and you think, oh, I've got plenty of time. We're in great shape. they are going to fill it out so fast that you're going to need to be honey supering and being pretty aggressive in the spring. But I like it to be, what I do like about it is having all that space allows a little bit more flexibility for me, because you do need to stay on top of things with the single deeps, or at least having tons of space for them. If you're going to walk away from a single deep with, you know, with honey supers on top, then you just go ahead and drop two or three supers at a time. Put them on there, because they will fill it up really, really fast. And if you're a younger person, or you know, you don't have any back or knee issues or whatever, using those, you know, moving those double deeps around is not a big deal. Like, I still can do it. I don't particularly like to do it. I can do it at a small scale. It's no big deal. But that's where you can kind of get that balance of the kind of best of both worlds. I do like the narrow cavity of the 8-frame hardware anyway. I think if I were starting over right now, I would do 8-frame everything. All of my Langstroth stuff would be 8-frame, because one, the workers don't really seem to want to work the edges that much anyway. I always have to move from the edges to the middle to get them to take full advantage of the space. By default, they're not going to do it. I've got to work with them a little bit on that. So I like that part of it. I think it's a bit more tree-like, and it's a little bit more manageable. But again, if you're younger, which is funny, I always say that about, oh, if you're younger, don't worry about it or whatever, but go to a B club meeting. Like, I haven't been to the local B club in like, I think I went there a couple of years ago. So bad about that. But anyway, I went to like the annual meeting or whatever it was. There's a lot of gray hair, right? And I'm not picking on gray haired folks. I've got a lot of it myself. What I'm getting at is you don't see a lot of teens and 20s people rushing out to become beekeepers. It is kind of an aging population from what I see. Yes, there are some younger folks out there, but not as many as we really need. But slinging around those double deeps, it can get to be a pain. Now, you don't have to inspect. This is important to talk about. A lot of people will tell you that one of the biggest, you know, pros of the single deep approach is that you only have to inspect the single deep. You only have, the queen's going to be isolated to one spot. And that's very, very true. But when you're inspecting a double deep configuration, yes, you do have to look through the whole thing, kind of air quotes there, but you don't have to look at every frame. Like, you can go and start looking and see where brood is. Like, you don't have to like do an inspection of every single frame. Start in the middle and work your way out. You're going to find pretty quickly when you open up and you see, okay, that's capped brood, you don't even need to look at that frame. The queen is not going to be running around on a frame of capped brood. So the first thing I'm looking for is a open frame, a frame that has open cells. When I see that, that's where I'm like, okay, this is most likely where that queen is going to be. So you're looking for open cells that are, you know, brood, where you see that big oval kind of shape, or you'll see where you have a big oval in the middle, which means, you know, she's going to lay in the middle and kind of work her way to the edges. So you see that frame in the middle is about the size of like the, I don't know, maybe the bottom of a coffee cup or the bottom of a cup or whatever. And you can see that there's emerging workers in that space. They're going to clean up everything in that middle and make it available to be laid, you know, again, with new eggs. So those are the spaces I'm looking. You know, I'm looking for new eggs. If there are eggs on a frame, pretty good chance that queen was there, obviously, very recently. So when I find eggs with frames, she's there. She might be on an adjacent frame. But if I start at the, you know, if I pull the top deep and I'm looking inside that, and all I'm seeing is cat brood everywhere, I'm just pushing that aside and moving down to the next one, right? So you don't have to look at every single frame, but there is a little bit more looking involved. And another consideration when, you know, comparing single deep versus double deep is to think about your IPM strategy specifically as it relates to treating for Varroa. Quite often you'll see something may say, use one of these per brood chamber, or use two of these per brood chamber. Or like if you're using oxalic acid, you might be using, you know, 1 or 1.5 grams per brood box, things like that. So if you only have a single brood box, you can cut your treatments in half. So that's sort of one little bonus thing to keep in mind when considering which way you want to go. I wouldn't let that be the driving force behind your decision, but definitely a bonus for why you may want to go with the single brood chamber route. Okay, so I want to just do a little bit of a kind of a recap here, just kind of between the two. So when we talk about the single deep with honey supers on top of that, I think it's a little bit easier to manage. I think it's easier when lifting and moving honey supers that are mediums. You know, I've definitely lifted many, many times a deep that is packed out with honey, and it's heavy. It's heavy, and yes, it's doable, and you can make it happen, but it's definitely not my first choice. So the single deep approach is a little bit helpful for that. Inspections, like I mentioned, it's nice to have the queen isolated to a single box. Is it the end of the world if you have to go through two? No, not really. But as a newer beekeeper, especially when these inspections are kind of scary still, right? When you're still in the phase of like, I remember very, very well being like, I know I need to get in that hive. I know I need to do an inspection. And they were so mad at me last time. I really don't know if I want to go back, but I have to. And you're going through this like mental struggle, either that or it's just me. I don't know. But I remember that. And the struggle is real. And if I could say, look, I just really have to look in this one box, I feel like that would make me a little bit happier than knowing that I've gone through this entire top box and she's not there. There's no eggs. And I'm like, oh my golly, now I have to disassemble this thing and go all the way to the bottom and look some more. So there's definitely some advantages to that. Now, one thing that I would say on a like a hive body management, frame management kind of approach, in general, like to tell you, let the bees manage the space in the way that they want to. There are times where it makes sense to consolidate. A lot of times for me, what will happen is the bees will have this massive ramp up in the spring. They'll be running, let's just say you're using a double deep configuration. You'll have two deeps, and then I'll have a medium for them, queen excluder, and one or two mediums on top of that. So it can get to a fairly large configuration. You pull honey supers off for extracting. Everything else is still packed. In my area, with that dearth, they will blow through an entire deep, because usually that second deep is mostly honey. They will blow through almost the whole thing, pretty much. And I have to like reorg everything and essentially take out a deep. So I'm down to like one deep and then a medium hive body and then a queen excluder or however I break it down. But quite often I will eliminate space so that it's less to defend. It's less to overwinter if they overwinter in that configuration. So as the bees are going to work their way up, the weather gets nicer, and they're going to start working their way back down again. Sometimes it's a little bit better to kind of remove that middle space, put it at the bottom, basically, take what was at the bottom completely out, and they have less that they have to manage early on, and then bring it back in later on. I know this might sound kind of confusing. It's a lot of movement back and forth, and we'll hopefully be able to capture this a little bit in video here shortly. But managing that space, there's a little bit more to that sometimes when you're juggling the double deeps. Whereas with that single deep, it's just always going to be at the bottom. The one thing to kind of keep in mind is your overall cavity, right? The cavity, the space that the bees are using, it's going to be the same. Whether you're using a single deep approach or a double deep brood chamber, whatever you're doing, the cavity size is roughly the same. It's just a matter of how you divide it up and manage it. And I would say lastly, like in that general area of some points and factors to think about, is with the swarm prevention. I do believe that it's a little bit easier to prevent swarming with that double deep layout than the single, particularly when you're working with newer, you know, newer hardware. The drawn comb thing is really a bigger deal than I think it's given credit for, or at least attention to, because when you don't have drawn comb, it really can be a barrier for expansion for the bees. All right, guys, so I hope I covered everything. There's a lot, again, there's a lot of moving parts with it. It's a relatively simple concept. It's really just a matter of isolating the queen versus not, how much you want to lift and move around. Can it happen? Should it happen? I definitely don't think it's a one-size-fits-all thing. Some people are going to say like, hey, I love it. I think it's a great approach. I love having the queen in one space. I love all the brood being in one space. This is great. Other people are going to say, yeah, I'm more of a traditionalist. I like the double deep approach. You know, then you have the alternative. I just want to use all mediums and I don't use queen excluders at all. There are a lot of people who say I will never use a queen excluder because of whatever reason. Some people say that as the workers move through the slots of the queen excluder, it damages their wings and makes it more difficult for them to fly. Some of them can't fly at all. I've heard that one for many years. I've used queen excluders ever since I started beekeeping. It hasn't been an issue. I've had hives where I haven't used them and it really hasn't been an issue. I think it's actually kind of cool letting them just go through their whole space. I think there's a lot to be said for just doing all mediums and letting them manage it the way they want, right? There's so many different ways to do it. This is just one of many different ideas and options. But I would say definitely, you know, try it out for yourself. You know, try different layouts depending on how many hives you have. See what you like better. See what the bees like better. If you have a couple of colonies available that are roughly the same size and structure, do one way and one the other. See if one of them is more productive. You know, do interviews and surveys and see how happy they are about it. You know, just see what works for you. All right, folks. Well, I think that's going to be all that I have for you. I think episode 138, we're going to get out next week. It's just common beginning beekeeper mistakes. So we're going to be talking about that next. As always, you can catch up with us in the Discord room. If you go to the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage, it's just Beekeeping for Newbies, NEWBEES.com. We've got a lot of different links on there, links to the Discord room. Check us out on YouTube. It's just youtube.com/@Beekeeping for Newbies. And as always, if you like what you hear and you hate hearing commercials, feel free to buy us a cup of coffee. We certainly would appreciate that. Help cover some of our cost. Otherwise, we got to bring the commercials back. It's up to you. All right, folks, have a great weekend. Take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.